Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, also our Detroit Magazine's number two most beloved sports columnist or blogger for the year of 2020. Eric, on Sunday, the Lions stumbled their way to a 30-27 win over the Washington football team.
Yeah.
And how did you like it?
Well... You know, you like the start, right? You like what's working in the first half. Even the start of the second wasn't bad, right? Then that collapse was just miserable. And then you give up, what, 21 unanswered. Then it's tied at 24. Prater comes in and gets you a lead, and then you give it.
Short lead.
And then you are able to hold them off down the stretch, hold them to a field goal. Which ties it, and then 16 seconds left, and Stafford does his magic, aided by a Chase Young unnecessary roughness penalty, which was pretty massive, and then Matt Prater comes through on a Lions record 59-yard or Lions record tying 59-yard field goal
with
to
himself.
Win it. Right? So yeah, ties with himself, right? So I mean, there's a lot to unpack. I think. We could, if we want to start positive, we just start at the end, right? They held at the end, even though they had been giving up. They gave up three touchdown drives in a row. They found a way to hold and keep Washington to a field goal. And then 16 seconds just seemed like nothing. But then, like, you know, you got three timeouts. You can use the middle of the field. Washington's going to be in prevent. And so – they took advantage. They went aggressive. And then, you know, with 6 seconds left, go ahead.
No, it kills me when these teams go into prevent, you know, at this point, especially with the track record Stafford has. Like, he's led a lot of final seconds comebacks. Like, he does understand the clock. Like, that was the one thing, you know, because we always talk about the value of Matthew Stafford, or how good he is or how good he isn't. Like, one thing he has down pat, and I don't know if they're born with this or he played tons of Madden growing up and figured it out, but, like, his awareness for an entire 60-minute football game isn't 99, if, once again, using the, like, the Madden idea. But it certainly is in that last minute and a half of the game. Like, He's never, well, you know, you're rushing because it's the end of the game, but it never seems to be too much for him.
Yeah, he always
seems.
And that
was true under, you name the head coach, you name the coordinator, you know, right. Whether it's Cooter, whether it's Bevel, whether it's, you know, under Patricia or under Caldwell or all the way back under Schwartz. Mm-hmm. He's always had this innate ability to understand, you know, how much time he's got left, get all of his teammates on the same page, you know, to be at the line of scrimmage and make your way to the line of scrimmage as quickly as possible. And I don't know what that is, you know, and we've talked a lot before about Stafford, and I would be fine if they got rid of Stafford tomorrow. But, like, the one thing he does really well is he really understands what's going on at the end of the game when he's got the ball, you know, and with very little time. It's almost as if he's an adrenaline junkie in a way where, you know, like the first 57 and a half minutes or 58 and a half minutes of the game, like, don't matter to him. It's that last minute and a half. It's like all he's waiting for. He's going to throw bad interceptions here or there. He's just waiting for that last minute and a half, which is a bad way to go about things. But
sure, you
know, it worked out well this go around.
Oh, I tell you what, just having four daughters makes him an adrenaline junkie in my mind. you know, I think his leadership is really a terrific asset, right? And I think that gets underrated a lot. You know, he understands, you know, what defenses are trying to do in those situations. He understands where he can use the field. He gives a clear message on what he wants to do. Yep. And says, you know, hey, you know, get 10 yards, get down, right? They released the sights and sounds with Stafford this week, right? He was the one that was mic'd up for it, of course. Whenever he's mic'd up, it's always a barn burner here at the end of the game. And, you know, and he says, look, we got to get 10 yards and get down, right? Because with 6 seconds, he knows that's all he can get. And so he executed that. And of course he went to Marv, right? I mean, he goes to his veteran that he trusts the most, right? And so
well, he can't go to Hockenson after what he pulled a few weeks back.
I mean, that it should be obvious too to defenses too that like in that situation with the guys that were out there, it just Marv has almost automatic hands. He's a veteran. He understands what to do. He's smart about the clock awareness as well. So like it was an easy connection. Washington backed off all the way too. Like they didn't even challenge him. They gave him those free 10 yards like it was nothing. So,
which is nuts on Washington's behalf.
Right.
And I know that they fear the deep play, but it's, you know, with you 6 or anything that's going to give Prater a chance.
Yeah.
You know, any kicker, not just Prater, you know.
Funny thing is, did you notice the marker that Fox had put out there where they're like, this is the field goal line to attain?
Field goal line. Yeah.
Did you recognize where that was? If they would have made it to that line, it would have been a 64 yarder.
Oh, okay. Well, that's his right. That's his record. But,
so, right.
You know. Well, that's nice that they did that for him.
Respect. What was funny was that in the pregame, they were the beat writers, like Chris Burke, was saying that Prater was hitting them from 60, you know, without, you know, pretty consistently. So he had the leg for it that day. He was dialed in that day. And this is the second walk-off that he's had, or is it the third because of the extra point against Atlanta, right? So, like, he's walked off 3 of these games for the Lions this year. So I don't care. I don't care that he's missed a handful from 50 this year.
He's had a rough season, yeah.
This is what he's doing in these last seconds, the way that he's automatic like that is impressive. The Lions put a stat out that in situations where the game is on the line and it's under 2 minutes in the fourth quarter or in overtime, Prater is 22 of 22. Like, that's startling, right? Like, you talk about a guy who responds under pressure. I mean, this is the same type of mentality that Stafford has. The pressure does not bother him. He almost embraces it. And I mean, when he hits the field goal, he like, you know, he puts his arms out like he's Russell Crowe in Gladiator, right? Like,
yeah.
He's
like, are you not entertained?
That's confidence, right? So, I was happy for him. I felt even when it was 59, and they lined up. I'm like, he's gonna hit this. I'm still surprised when he misses, right? And I felt confident. I'm like, I can't believe they gave him, they got, I can't believe they allowed the Lions to get into a place where he would even get a shot at it, 60 yards, 59. Or what I mean, like, he shouldn't even have been, they shouldn't even have allowed them to get to that. So now the Chase Young, I mean, look, we need to talk about that. The Chase Young penalty was a legit penalty. Man, how does he not have that awareness to pull up in that situation, right?
Yeah. No, that was a dumb play. That was a Lions-like play, so he would have fit in perfectly here.
So
and hopefully he learns from it, and if he doesn't, well, like, this will be a sign for terrible things to come from football team fans.
From here now, on the broadcast, Tlaib said, I don't blame him for hitting Stafford because he hasn't really gotten to him all day. And I thought, oh, that's maybe he's just taking a shot. But when I went back and I watched, that was one of the things I was watching at. I was watching, how did they address Chase Young? Like, what did they do? Sometimes they would put like just Crosby on him or just Decker. Sometimes they would, a lot of times they would use a tackle with a tight end. Sometimes they would use two tight ends just on him. They had a lot of varying techniques on how they wanted to approach him. And it wasn't all double teams and it wasn't always the traditional way of attacking him. They were very creative in how they disrupted him. And Tlaib was right. He was kept out of the backfield a ton. Like he looked frustrated, right? And he only got in there a couple of times in one of them, Like one of them was, he was in there late when Stafford got his helmet knocked off, and that's when he injured his thumb, right? Like he was in on that play, but he was still late to the party, but he just didn't get back there. They did a very nice job of strategizing their blocking components to try and take him away. I think they felt more comfortable one-on-one with Sweat and, you know, using combo blocks on the inside and then being creative with the blocking against Young. I think they were worried about him, and the way that they used that stuff, I thought was very creative. I think the other big thing that stood out in this game was 73% of the time, DeAndre Swift was on the field, right?
Yeah, and I hope this is the this is what we're going to see moving forward, more than just for my own selfish fantasy football purposes.
Right. And we'll get into his injury in a little bit here. But he looked good, right? He looked good in the passing game. He looked good on the ground. He got stuffed a couple of times, but he broke off bigger runs and
5 yards of carry.
Yeah,
5.1.
And I think one of the underrated things with this is that, and we kind of talked about this earlier in the year, is that when these younger backs start getting more touches, it lessens the load for Peterson, and then Peterson should be able to make more hay out of
hopefully be more effective.
Yeah, and so Peterson averaged 5.1. I think a carry.
Four
right?
carries, 21 yards, 5.25 yards per carry for those four middle. But still, he only touched the ball five times for 30 yards. You know, that's 6 yards a touch.
I'm fine with
that. Is that where Peterson should be at this point of his career? Maybe.
Yeah, look, I that's what I thought his role would be coming into this year, right? I thought Kerryon would have a bigger chunk, and I thought Peterson was going to be the 6 to 8 touch guy. And he can, if he chunks off 30, 40 yards, perfect. You know what I mean? So I was happy to see what they did with Swift. I think that is going to be the plan moving forward when he's healthy. And then hopefully this is, this was his coming out party, right? Now, he had a good game against Jacksonville a few weeks back, but this was really the time, I think, when he was establishing himself as the guy, right? 73% of the snaps is a real statement, considering on most weeks, no back even got close to 50. They were all usually in that 40 range, right? Or lower, mm-hmm. right? So I thought he had a good day. He had a career day on yardage. He snatched the soul of that linebacker on that touchdown pass of his, right? Where they shifted him in motion, and then he, cut inside and put his foot in the ground, stepped outside, and the linebacker basically fell over. Right? Like he's extraordinarily difficult to cover in those types of situations. And that is a massive asset that they can lean on moving forward as well. Couple other things that I noted about the game was, I think, man, Aquara just continues to get it done, right?
He's having a good season.
He's having a very good season. PFF.
Is this a contract year for him?
Yes. Yes.
But his brother's here, so that's a plus.
It is.
Go ahead. Go with the PFF, the interesting stat.
Yeah, PFF has him now. He's now in the top five in pressure rate, right?
In the
league. That's yes. Like it. What he's doing is impressive because he got six hurries in this game, which was, he continues to have the most hurries pretty much every game. Everson Griffin is getting a little bit more hype after this game because he hit the quarterback five times, which is a crazy amount. But really, Aquara is the driving force. And if Aquara isn't playing the way that he is, and Trey Flowers is still on IR, my goodness, this team would have a real problem, right? But instead, you've got Aquara playing well. When Trey Flowers comes back, hopefully he goes back to his playing well. Everson Griffin's playing well. And then Austin Bryant showed some flashes as well. So, like, all of a sudden the edge doesn't look as bad as it has as we thought it was. Now, if Julian is able to come back as well, now he's just going to add even more depth to that. So, Now you got to focus on the interior because your edge depth is starting to come into play. It's starting to look a little bit better. They seem to have really reduced their focus of their linebackers to Collins and Ragland, and everybody else is just extra, right? And that's fine. They really pushed splitting that all up early. Now they're kind of focused on, okay, these are the guys that are working for us. You're getting healthier in the secondary. And so there's still a long way to go, and the defense still
gave up well over 400 yards.
To one of the worst offenses in the league.
In the league, yeah.
But it is trending in the right direction, right? Mm-hmm. They still have a bunch of problems, and I think the coaching is still not doing them any favors in a lot of situations.
Problem number one.
Yes. Yes. Right. I think the interior defensive line is still a little bit of a problem. Linebackers are, again, it's hit and miss. They go where Collins goes, right? But you know, it's trending up, right? Well, you got to get some guys healthy there though. And then on offense, it's the same thing. Like you got to get guys healthy in order for it to trend in the right direction. And you know, 30 points is nothing to shake a stick at, right? That the fact that they were able to get 30 is good. Like we only had them getting like low 20s, right? We didn't even think they'd touch it, right?
Football team had a good defense, you know, and usually in those games we struggle to, we struggle to move the ball against a lot of good defenses.
Well, and then this week it's almost like the opposite of Washington, and we'll get into why when we preview the Panthers. But I thought they did well to take advantage of the opportunities that they have, right? So that being said, the coaching staff is still problematic, and you're still not adjusting fast enough to certain things.
Hundlin said himself that he did not use go to man coverage soon enough in the second half.
And
kind of an understatement.
And I mean, like, the mentality, though, to be able to just not be able to get a stop three drives in a row against a pretty terrible offense is that, again, that goes back to coaching. That goes back to preparedness. That goes back to being able to motivate them on the sidelines. I still think, like you said, the biggest hurdle is the coaching staff right now. So they've got to get out of their own way in a lot of things. They got to go back and look at what was working coming out of the bye and try and implement some new things. And, you know, you've got two games coming up here where you're going to get a shot at, you're going to get a shot to do, you know, potentially get even and then even go above 500 in the next two games.
I know.
And then if the Bears, you know, aren't as good.
Excited.
No, well, and if the Bears aren't as good, well, now all of a sudden you're trending in the right direction. Last month is still terrible. But
the Bears, they really got to be rooting for Trubisky's health for the next time they play the Lions.
So from a mentality standpoint, they've got to be able to get out of their own way if they want to take advantage. All right. Anything else you want to add to this game? I think I covered the things I wanted.
I guess I have a question for you. Are you happy with this win?
Here's what I'm happy with. Okay. I'm happy with the fact that they were collapsing and they were able to stall the collapse and then find a way to win it when they absolutely had to. And they really probably shouldn't have won it with 16 seconds left, but they were able to buckle their shin straps and get it done. Right. The team in the first month of the season, they would have lost a coin flip in overtime, given up a touchdown, and then the game would have been over, right? So that's improvement. I'm happy with that part of it. I'm not happy with the fact that they gave up as many points as they did to Washington. I'm not happy that it was as close as it needed to be. But I was happy that they were able to close.
All right, because, you know, it still seems that there's the two separate factions. There's the we want to see him win at all costs. And then it's like the other group's like, well, I really don't want to see him win because they get a better draft pick, and then Patricia right. and Quinn will be gone. So let's see where you were sitting with that.
The main issue with me, or the main feeling that I have, is that I feel like as a fan, you should always root for them to win. And if you don't want them sure. to win because you want a better draft pick, then that's fine. That's also your prerogative. But I don't think the people that are rooting for them to win, should be told not to, right? Because nothing's guaranteed, right? No matter how good of a draft pick you get, there's still no guarantee that guy works out. Right.
Yeah, no, I would argue at this point, there's no way they'll be at number one or number two. They're not going to get Trevor Lawrence. So, yeah, my argument is, well, what's the point? Because, yes, there are better prospects, in the top 10, but, like, look at the league. Look at the teams that are always good. They're not mm-hmm. drafting in the top 10. And right. look how often the Lions draft in the top 10. And look what they end up coming away with, except for that period, the Johnson Stafford Sue drafts, but like mm-hmm. other than that, like, yeah, Ziggy was okay, and who knows, and the jury's still out in Akuda, but like anything can happen, so at this point it's like, well, you might as well root for them to win, because what's the difference between the 8th pick and the 17th pick or whatever?
I think the reason you pull for a team is because you're hoping for them to have success. And if you're hoping for that sure. success on a week-to-week basis, then that's fine. Just because they win this game against Washington doesn't mean, if you're rooting for Patricia to be gone, it doesn't mean that he's going to be back next year because he beat Washington on a last-second 59-yard field goal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
enjoy yeah, – I tried to enjoy the moment, and I hope other people that wanted to enjoy the moment did. And if you're not enjoying the moment, then that's fine. You can turn the TV off. It's okay. Like, I understand.
No, those people don't turn the TV off. They still love to watch.
I don't propose to tell people how they can root, and I don't. And if you want to pull for them to lose so that the organization has a turnover in the front office and coaching staff, then it's your prerogative. It's okay. Yeah. But I think there's a lot of people that want like to watch them win. It's fun to watch them win. I thought it was nice. It's fun to watch a 59-yard field goal like that. It's I enjoyed it.
Very exciting at the end. All right, that's it. We're done with Washington.
Good.
All right, on to the Panthers, but first on the injury report. So you mentioned it Matthew Stafford's injured his thumb. It's on Sunday. It's a torn ligaments in the throwing hand, which to me would think it's like, well, there's no way you can play on Sunday, maybe for weeks. You've torn ligaments in your throwing hand.
Well, okay. So to track the roller coaster that is the Matt Stafford thumb watch, mm-hmm. he injures it on Sunday, tapes it up, doesn't miss a snap, and leads them to a comeback win. Or not a comeback win. They leads them to a victory, last second victory. Then on Monday, the X-rays.
From a head win.
What's that? Go ahead. Thank you.
Come from a head win.
Thank you. And then on Monday, X-rays come back. Everything looks good. They're optimistic. Tuesday, he has a minor tear, something similar to what Breeze had, but not the same. Even when they were reporting the minor tear, they were all saying he's probably still going to play on Sunday. And then Wednesday he doesn't practice, and so now people are getting a little bit more worried. Today he is back practicing, and the people on defense that were interviewed today all said, "Yeah, no, he looks exactly the same as he has before," and they're not noticing any. There's less zip on the ball. The zip's still there. Accuracy's still there. So, the reports today seemed awfully confident that he was going to be able to play and he should be on the path to start again. So, it sure seems like Stafford is in a good spot to be able to come back and play this week.
Yeah. So there'll be no surprise. He did not practice on Wednesday. He was limited today. But, yeah, he's going to end up playing on Sunday. The big one, after we saw a great performance by DeAndre Swift against Washington, we just talked about, he has a concussion.
Yeah, he did not have a concussion on Wednesday, and now he had a concussion and didn't even come out to practice. So something either happened like during Wednesday's practice, then the concussion symptoms showed up later, or something happened in between, right? Something could have happened in his personal life that we don't know about. And so we don't know where it came from. But what we do know is that by missing practice today, he's basically not going to play this weekend. The way the protocol works is you have to be symptom-free, you have to clear an exercise regimen, then you have to have a non-padded practice, and then you have to have a full padded practice before you can be cleared by an independent doctor. Well, they only practice one more time, right? So with two practices on the
– can they squeeze in a Saturday practice?
Well, what they would have to do is they would have to do like a walkthrough tomorrow and then a full practice on Saturday, which they wouldn't want to do. They wouldn't want to do a full padded practice on Saturday. And then he'd have to –
Who judges whether it's a full padded practice then? Like, is there somebody from the league watching me like, all right, well, we consider that a full padded practice. Could I just have everybody out there in pads?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, no, we'll run a few routes. We'll throw the ball around. Nobody touch each other. You know, no tackling. All right, that was full padded practice. We'll see you guys, you know, let's go to the plane.
Sure. I don't know the parameters on that to be clear. But I know that they're only allowed so many padded practices, right?
Yeah, so, no, you're right. Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, so if they would not be able to have a padded practice on Friday, then if they were going to have a walkthrough but in pads on Saturday. So it'd be a big shakeup, and you have a lot of other guys that are injured that you'd be guessing on.
Long list.
Yeah, you got a lot of other guys you'd be guessing on. Without that last padded practice to determine where they are, just to maybe get the rookie back. Because then you also have to get him cleared by a doctor, and you have to travel. And he can't travel with the concussion. So he'd have to stay behind, get the medical eval. And I don't know the turnaround rate on that. I don't know like how much distance between the practice and the medical exam. I don't think it's that far. I think they could actually do that like on the same day. So it's possible. Then he could fly it in. I mean, like, it would take a lot of finagling to get him in Carolina playing on Sunday. And I just don't think it's realistic. It's possible.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Because I mean, look, if he didn't practice today because he was going through the workout, going through the cardio, then yeah, I mean, maybe he does a non-padded tomorrow. Maybe he does. Maybe they rearrange things. I don't know. I don't want anybody to get their hopes up that he's going to be out there. It's probably going to be Adrian Peterson who gets the start, but Kerryon's going to get a lot of looks, and then you're probably going to see Jonathan Williams for the first time this season, and that's going to be their backfield. But fortunately, and we'll talk about why that won't be so bad against Carolina in a bit.
All right, so moving on from Swift, Kenny Golladay, he was limited Wednesday, did not practice today, Thursday.
Yeah, but Meinke was out at practice today. He's the pool reporter this week. And he said that Golladay went through warm-ups, which Patricia said was going to happen. And then he said Golladay looked good. He went through some routes. He was interacting with everybody. He was going through the same pacing of everybody. But then when the media had to leave, the Lions then said he didn't do anything after that. And we just they ruled him as not having practiced on Thursday. So to me, based on what Kyle saw, and based on like what their plan was during warmups with him to kind of get an evaluation of him, my guess is that they just decided, okay, we want to stress you a little bit in warmups, and then we're going to rest. We're going to do a little rest and recovery on Thursday, come back on Friday limited, and then hopefully play on Sunday. I think that's the plan. It's possible they saw something they didn't like, and then that's why they shut him down. But my kind of like gut feeling is that this was a rest day. This was a okay, let's see how you felt coming off of a Wednesday practice, and then will you be able to recover long term after Sunday's game? So that's my guess on Golladay. But I mean, look, we'll know more tomorrow.
All right, Amendola did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, that's not good, because this guy rarely misses practice, even when he is injured. So the fact that he's missed two, pretty discouraging. If he gets a limited in, I wouldn't rule him out. But he sure looks like he's trending in the wrong direction.
Marvin Jones didn't practice on Wednesday. He was limited Thursday.
Yeah, step in the right direction for him. He played all of his regular snaps. So I'm guessing that rest, that was kind of like a rest day and then kind of like a medium day here today. Yeah, my assumption is he'll be full on Friday, good to go on Sunday.
Jamal Agnew, he was a full participant both days.
Yeah, and they're going to need him, right? Amendola potentially not there. Yeah. Agnew, he's your replacement.
And even Swift plays out of the backfield. He might have some usage on Sunday.
You mean as Agnew? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And I think, you can use Marvin Hall in the slot a little. You can go big with Cephas in the slot a little. There's some ways to replace Amendola, but if you're looking for a pure, quickness guy, Agnew is really the guy that it's going to take a lot of those Amendola snaps.
Hockenson, limited Wednesday and Thursday, basically the entire passing game.
Yeah, right. He should be fine. His snaps were pretty much where they normally were, a little lower. But remember he got injured midweek last week. I think this is just them taking it easy with him. So a lot of these guys, they're all dinged up. Every one of them is dinged up, right? All the starting offensive skill players are hurt in some capacity.
Except for ageless wonder, Adrian Peterson.
But I think the majority of them are in good spots to still find a field on Sunday.
Vitae, limited Wednesday, Thursday. Does this even really matter?
Well, it matters because what are you going to do at right guard? At least you've got Joe Dahl isn't on the injury report anymore, so there's a good chance he's ready to go. Ode Ebuche is coming off his best game as a Lion last week. And if you get Vitae back, then it just gives you more options.
Yep. All right, Deshaun Hand, who was not on the report on Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
So these are always concerning. When you're not on the injury report and then you are, it either indicates you got hurt Wednesday and then they needed you to take it easy on Thursday, or it means you got hurt Thursday. Either way, those late week injuries are usually bad, right? So unfortunately, we won't know more until we see what he does tomorrow, but questionable label and then maybe a game time decision could be in his future. It really just depends on when he got injured and how severe it is.
Nick Williams was limited Wednesday and he was full participant on Thursday.
Well, it's a good thing that he's coming back, especially if Hand's injury is significant.
Austin Bryant, no practice on Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
Right, so trending in the right direction. Third on that edge line, but he still played like 50% of the snaps last week, so still an important player that they need right now with Julian and Flowers unavailable.
Jared Davis, limited on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, trending in the right direction, right, just like Agnew.
Christian Jones, also limited Wednesday, Thursday.
I mean, this guy's been limited for over a month now, and it hasn't stopped him yet. So I don't see this stopping him this week either.
Jayron Kearse, not on the report Wednesday, limited Thursday.
Yeah, same thing like as with Deshaun. We won't know until we get a little bit more information on him.
Excuse me. The practice squad players that are being protected, D. Virgin, Mohamed Sanu, and Frank Heron. I think that was the same as last week, right?
Yeah, they had Marcus Martin last week as well, but they didn't need him with Vitae and Joe Dahl getting healthy. So Virgin is still there because, they're a little bit thin at gunner, but they're making it work. Sanu is there because almost three of your three starting receivers plus Agnew are all hurt, right? So You need some depth security there. And then the Frank Heron thing is because both your defensive tackles and Hand and Williams are both on the injury report. So you got to have depth there as well. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense to protect those three for sure.
All right, so that's it for the injuries and the practice squad report. Let's start talking about Lions taking on the 3-7 Carolina Panthers. 1 p.m. Sunday, Bank of America Stadium, Charlotte, North Carolina. We always like to tell you what the Vegas line is. There is no Vegas line.
Yeah,
due to the health of Bridgewater, yeah, and Stafford. So
right.
Leave it off the board. Referees, Ronald Torbert.
I don't think we know a whole lot about him.
I don't know. I was running through my head. It's like, did he do any of the other games this season? Not that I can think of.
You know, at this point, we're usually starting to cycle through a second wave of these guys, but he doesn't stand for positive.
Are they all doing regional games? Aren't they trying to keep the refereeing crews more closer to their homes this season? Or,
I mean, that would make sense.
I totally made that up.
Oh, I mean, it would make sense. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah. So we'll be on Fox. The announcers, Kevin Kugler, Chris Spielman, and Laura Oakman. Is this our first Spielman game of the season besides the – yeah, it wouldn't be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because no preseason. Have not seen or heard from Spielman in 2020. That's right.
All right, so I mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. He's got a knee injury. He may not play, but if you read, it's the same as Stafford. Like, he might not be practicing full out, but he's going to play on Sunday. At least what I'm seeing.
Well, and it kind of switched a little bit today.
There we go.
It was, oh no, he's not going to play on Monday, and then it switched to he's probably going to play Tuesday. He's probably going to play Wednesday, and then today they were and then today it was. This is the second practice in a row where he's basically done nothing. And he's been in a non-contact, and while he's able to throw the ball, he can't stand or move, or he's not mobile in the pocket, and he's just a sitting duck back there. And so they're concerned.
Going to bring in the deep shotgun.
Well, right.
Deep shotgun. Way
so,
back.
The Panthers have been very cautious with their injured players this year. So Bridgewater. All the signs today were that they were trending towards him not playing, him being unlikely to play. So the editor over at Panthers Wire wrote at the beginning of the week, if Bridgewater doesn't play, it's the single most devastating player, and that I don't know how they beat anybody without Bridgewater. Because
I like P.J. Walker, but I don't even know if he's going to be the one starting.
Well, that's the thing. They've been splitting both of them in camp, right? And when they took the field last week, Bridgewater was hurt with like a 5 plays left. It was P.J. Walker who
– the former XFL star P.J. Walker. May we give him the full name.
Correct. And but Greer's a guy who's been with them he was with them all last year. He was the third rounder. He's a guy they, but again, different coaching staff. So they seem to like Walker a little bit more. Who knows? We don't really know what exactly they're going to do. They've been splitting reps like.
Yeah, him since, and Will Greer.
Yeah. Since week one. Like the reports from Carolina have been, they've literally not had a number two. It's been altering which one is the number two on that and on any given week. So, and they've been altering snaps in practice this week as well. So my guess is if Walker came in the game for them, it's probably a good sign that they're leaning towards him. So, you know, we'll see. But no Bridgewater would be a big break for the Lions, especially, you know, just because they've got skill players, right? And because they've got good skill players, if you can't get them the ball, there's no point having them then.
Now, you would also the Lions really lucked out with that Christian McCaffrey is out after seeing what Dalvin Cook did, Christian McCaffrey would have definitely eaten the Lions alive.
Yeah, he's got a shoulder injury.
So we got Mike Davis is going to play, and he's capable. He's not terrible.
Oh, yeah, no, Mike Davis was a guy that we wanted on our roster not too long ago, right? He's a good player. He's not McCaffrey. Okay. I mean, he's not McCaffrey. But if the Lions, you know, if you're missing Bridgewater and you're missing McCaffrey, well, then you're going to lean on Mike Davis a little bit more in these situations to try and give the quarterback, you know, some breaks. So Mike Davis is really somebody they're going to have to worry about. And he's played good this year too, especially because McCaffrey's been on the shelf most of the season. So Davis has been the guy that they've leaned on. And, you know, their other backs behind them are, you know, you don't see them a whole lot. But Davis is not a bad running back by any stretch. He's a guy they still have to be legitimately game planning for.
All right, the wide receivers are Robbie Anderson, who was a nice free agent pickup by them this season, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel. So it's a good group of receivers.
You know, DJ Moore, I think, is the consistent one of the bunch. But, you know, I think Curtis Samuel could be a potential problem for the Lions, just because in a lot of ways he can do a lot of the same things J.D. McKissic did. And the Lions didn't really have an answer for J.D. McKissic, right? And that's J.D. McKissic, and Samuel's a better player than him. So I don't know. I don't know if it's – you know, I'm always of the mind that a safety is your best option because you're matching athleticism and speed a little bit better. And if you don't like your safety matchups, then you're looking for some other uber-talented player. And this is a situation like earlier in the year where I said, why not just use Okuda on him? You know, why not just say, okay, when he's on the field, Okuda, you're on the field matching him. They've done that in the past. They did that with against KC last year, where Mike Ford shadowed their speedy guy, not Hall, the other.
Tyreek Hill. Oh, not Hill.
No, not Hill.
Oh, Hardman.
Yes, Hardman. When Hardman was on the field, Mike Ford was on the field. And Mike Ford did a great job in being just a pure shadow for Hardman. I would look at Curtis Samuel and I would say, look, Okuda's a good tackler. Okuda's got the athleticism. Why not just man him up on it? I think he tackles like a safety, and he has the athleticism of a corner. And that makes him a really good matchup for Samuel. And if Trufant is playing and he's one of your starters and Coleman is your nickel and Oware, who's probably playing the best out of all of them, is your other starter, then why not? Why not just match Okuda on him all the time? And again, they're not going to do it because I'm suggesting it. But that's honestly, if you can think outside of the box, that's a way to – go after a guy who is a potential problem. I mean, like, I think Okuda could have handled McKissic last week too. You know what I mean? I think it's a bit unorthodox, but it makes a lot of sense when you start – if you're going to play matchup football. If you're not going to play matchup football, then you can throw that out the window. But they've been playing matchup football. They had Trufant shadow all last week. You know, maybe he shadows again. And if you're going to play the shadow game, I that's the matchup I like. I would like to see Okuda follow Samuel around.
The tight end is Ian Thomas, question mark? 12 catches, 93 yards, and a touchdown. Interesting. I, you know, don't know much about him.
Yeah, we played Indiana, right?
Yeah, I know. Even I'm looking at that. I'm like, I don't remember this guy in Indiana.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Doesn't have a name that really stands out, unlike their current group of wide receivers there and tight end.
He's a fourth rounder. He's more of a pass catcher than a blocker, which is you know, where the other two guys kind of step in. Thompson's a better blocker. And I think he's
Manhurts.
Manhurts can block too. But I think Thompson's really their go-to blocker. But yeah, Thomas is their pass catcher. But when you have the other pass catchers on the team, I don't know, he kind of gets lost. And in my opinion, he's not anything to write home about. The fact that you didn't even know who he was exactly, I think speaks volumes.
All right, the offensive line. There's a couple of guys questionable on it. Russell Okung, Chris Reed, Matt Paradise, John Miller, and Taylor Moton.
Yeah, Okung is almost certainly not going to play. Mm-hmm. And they've had to really shake things up because Trent Scott, who was one of their right guards, or I'm sorry, right tackles.
Right tackle.
Was playing left tackle. Moton from Western Michigan, he's good. He's good. He can hold down that right side pretty well. But they've shifted other guys into that left tackle spot to try and hold it down. And it's been a bit of a problem. Trent Scott was there last week. He did real well against the pass last week in passing situations. Just average kind of run blocker. But again, he's more of a right tackle that you're asking to play at left. I think Miller, John Miller was one of their big offseason acquisitions. He's played well. Same thing with Paredes. Like they got him, the center from Denver, and he's played good too. He's been averaged, if not maybe a little bit better. But that left guard spot is pretty weak. That left tackle spot has been kind of a turnstile. So that's where you're lining up Akwara, right? And you're asking Akwara to get home on those guys. You want to attack the left side. So they're an okay offensive line. They can pass block. But again, if your quarterback isn't, passing Teddy Bridgewater, then, they're not as effective in the run game. And if they're not as effective in the run game, then it's a little bit of a problem. Now, again, I think they're stronger on the right side in the run game than they are on the left. But again, that kind of comes with the talent level too.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, we'll see the Panthers run a four-man front, Brian Burns, Zach Kerr, first-round pick Derek Brown, and Yetur Gross-Matos, who's listed as questionable here from Penn State as their other defensive end.
Yeah, they so they had Kaywon Short, right? But he's on IR. Mm-hmm. And they were planning on playing Short and Brown next to each other. Brown's the first round draft pick, right?
Guy I wanted them to pick.
Yep. And he's played okay. He's been all right, average. But most rookies have been this year. It's just they've all kind of been just
hasn't been a super rookie crop, except for unless you're an undrafted free agent running back for Jacksonville.
Right. But I think not having Short next to him is also hindering him, right? But what's crazy is, Burns was a first round pick a year ago. And then Brown is the first round pick this year. And then Brevion Roy is a sixth round pick this year. And Matos is a second round pick this year. So they have three rookies and one sophomore. That's their defensive line. Okay. That is young. And they have struggled against the run. And I think this is really where it would have been a great game, a great opportunity for Swift to really hammer himself home here. But instead, maybe this is a good opportunity for the other backs to gain some confidence, right? When you look at what they do against the run, they are 29th in yards allowed. They're 20th in yards allowed over the course of a game. They've given up the 27th most yards over the season. They give up the second most rushing touchdowns, and they are susceptible to the big play. They give up, they've given up eight rushes over 20 yards this year. So they give up big plays. They give up chunks on the ground. This is a problem for the Panthers right now. On offense, the Panthers like to grind it out with the run game. They like to hold the ball, and the Lions like to do the same thing. And so you're going to have two teams here who are both going to be looking to establish the run,
trying to bore the crap out of you while you're watching them.
Against two defenses that really struggle to stop the run. So it's going to be I think there's going to be a lot of handoffs and deep shots here, because they're susceptible up front to be gashed on the ground and just, you know, run on.
All right, the linebacking core, Shaq Thompson, Tahir Whitehead. X-Line and Jeremy Chipp.
So Whitehead has struggled a lot. He's had a hard time this year. He used to be such a stout run defender, and he's struggled with that. So much so that he only plays about half their snaps, and they really have gone to almost like a one linebacker type of look, like a one and a half, right? Where Whitehead is that other half. The guy to really worry about is Shaq Thompson, right? Now, Shaq Thompson is the he's an undersized linebacker, so he's almost like a glorified safety. So you've basically got, you know, a young defensive line, and then Tahir Whitehead, who's struggling, and then a whole bunch of big defensive backs beyond that. So it's an interesting defense when you look at them, because they're not traditional in the way that they're set up. Now, Shaq Thompson can play, and Shaq Thompson can cover, right? He can cover. And, I mean, it's what you expect from a guy who's, you know, the size and speed that he is. But he's not great against the run. And again, it's a size issue. And with your other linebackers not being great against the run, well, it all kind of builds into the defensive line also struggling against the run. And then all the more reason why I think the Lions are going to try and use Peterson more in this game and hopefully get Kerryon more involved in this game, because that's really how you're going to – it's really how you're going to beat them. You're going to run the ball, and then you're going to try and catch them and exploit their secondary, because their secondary is also very young and very problematic. I think they are the 31st worst defensive secondary. And ironically, I believe Washington's was the second or the 32nd. So it's another week where you got a bad secondary that you can take advantage of. But again, I expect them to use the run to kind of exploit that secondary.
All right, so the secondary is Dante Jackson, Rasul Douglas, the corners. Jackson's questionable. We might see Corn Elder and Troy Pride and Stanley Thomas Oliver III.
Right, so here's the thing. I don't think Jackson's going to play. And because Dante Jackson's not going to play, you've got Rasul Douglas, who's a little bit slower, a little bit more physical. And then Elder, Pride, and Oliver are all kind of nickels. And Pride and Oliver are both rookies. Again, you're back to rookies again. And so they're inside guys, and they're smaller guys, and they're young. So if Kenny is able to play, okay, and you're going to – I don't know where you're going to put Douglas. Are you going to put him on Kenny? Because Kenny's going to win that. Or are you going to put Douglas on Marv? Because then – I don't know who's going to stop Kenny then, right? I think they can, you know, they can use Shaq Thompson to try and go after Hawk. But, and I think that with no Amendola, they can use some of these nickel guys to, you know, go after Agnew or some other guys that are in the slot. Could be a sneaky game for Cephas, you know, because of the way that he's able to separate. Could be a good game for him to gain trust back again. But if Kenny plays, between him and Marv, somebody's going to find themselves open more often than not.
Well, that's interesting. And Stafford had 276 yards passed somewhere in there, but last Sunday, and that's against 32nd ranked secondary in the NFL.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens this Sunday. Cause Stafford also had 3 touchdowns, no picks, you think, like, with these lowly ranked secondaries, they really should be blowing them out of the water.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Place kicker. Oh, tack on to that.
I'm sorry. Did you mention the safeties?
I blew right past them. Trey Boston and Justin Burris.
And then Jeremy Chin, right? And then Chin is their second round pick. You got to remember, this is a team that spent every draft pick on a defensive player, right?
That Matt Rhule, that former Baylor coach.
And they actually use four of them, right? Because they also use so like you said, Trey Boston and Burris as the top two, and that's really kind of like they'll use those guys quite a bit, but they use Chin a ton, and they use Chin a lot because they'll use him up like as linebacker. So this is a team that will, because they'll go light at linebacker, they'll go heavier at safety, right? So you're going to have three safeties on the field the majority of the time. And so you might even get four safeties on at different phases because, they like to lean on those safeties a little bit more. The problem is that when you are if you're asking those safeties to match up against Hawk, it's a little bit harder, right? Now, Chin is super athletic, but he's also a rookie, and rookies are all going through bumps this year. And I don't know if – I don't think – in my opinion, Trey Boston won't be able to handle him. Maybe the older versions of Trey Boston would, but I just don't see it anymore. And I don't think Burris or Franklin can really handle Hawk either. That's why I think a guy like Shaq Thompson might end up taking him. But they may not they can't keep Shaq on him all the time because they're going to need Shaq up to try and stop the run. So it's going to be interesting. The chess match is really going to be, how do you cover Hockenson? And, the Lions are going to work the run game. Lions are going to work the outside. But really the Hockenson, how does Hockenson get involved? That's going to be the interesting thing that I'm not totally clear on, because he could end up being a really big factor, or it could just be nothing at all, right? He could just be a decoy the whole time. That I'm really not clear on.
All right, moving on to the special teams. Joey Sly is the place kicker, hitting 80% of all of his field goals, 91% of his extra points. So he's 20 of 25 field goals this season. He has not made any over 50 yards, but he's doing pretty well inside of 50.
I got nothing on him.
All right. He's all right. I've had him on the fantasy team a couple of weeks here and there. Joseph Charlton's the punter. His stats obviously are not as good as Jack Fox, is averaging 47.5 yards a kick. Out of 22 punts, 9 have dropped inside of the 20-yard line. Return man is Farrell Cooper.
He's a good returner. He's a guy I thought they might be interested in looking at this offseason because he had connections back to Bevel. But I'm not overly worried about Farrell at this point. But the overall special teams unit is not bad. They're in the top half of the league. Maybe even you could argue they're, in the top 10, but they're just nothing – they're solid. Let me just put it that way. They're solid. They're not like scary.
And Braden Combs definitely not scared of this team.
I like that guy more and more every week.
All right, so let's see what you're thinking for this week. Interesting match with the Lions. If they're going to make a move, now is the time. Actually, they're well past time to have been making the move. But they're 4-5, and they could be 5-5 by Monday morning. So what do you think's going to happen?
Well, look, it's a tough one. When you look at who they've played and who they've, beaten and who they've lost to, they're 3-7. But they have wins over the Cardinals and the Falcons, just like the Lions, and then they beat the Chargers. Which have just been, again, that's another snake bit team, right? But they put 30 up on the Raiders in a loss. They put 31 up on the Chiefs in a loss, put 24 on the Saints in a loss, 23 on the Bucs in a loss, right? They lost to the Falcons. I said they beat the Falcons 1 week. They lost to the Falcons another week. But like that 24-27 point range, like that's pretty realistic for the offense. The problem is, if you don't have Bridgewater, I just don't know. I don't know how to predict it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Can PJ Walker light the world on fire? You know what I mean? Or can he get them consistently in field goal range. I just don't know. If it was Bridgewater, I'd be saying 27 points is probably realistic. But I think losing him, you're going to take a you're probably going to take a discount on that. So I have him like it. I think it's going to be like 24. Okay. I think if they had Bridgewater, it would have been 27 minimum and probably up. But without him, you got to go under, in my opinion. So I don't think they – I'm not sure if they get more than 24. Now, when you look at how much they've given up, they're giving up 30 points here, 27, 23, 33, 46. And their last – they've lost the last five in a row. And in those last five games in a row, they've given up 46, 33, 25, 27, 23. And so, again, I think that's a realistic goal that the Lions could get. And so – I am going to go with a score of 27-24, and I'm sticking with the Lions this week.
All right, very interesting. You threw out a lot of numbers there, and I started to get lost during that.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. There is the Lions. When we talk about the matchups, and you look at, you know, all the rookies that are starting on the Panthers defense, this. And the fact that McCaffrey's out and Bridgewater might be out, or at least very hampered.
Yeah.
Everything points in the Lions' direction for this game. On top of the Lions having a little bit, the tiniest amount of momentum you can have on your side.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Panthers, though, have one giant advantage, and I think it's in coaching. You know, even though he's a new guy, he seems like he's got it a little more together than Patricia does. And this is a game, you know, they start heading in the right direction, and then this is a game they usually let it all, you know, break apart with. I don't know. I guess I got to go with the Lions too. The Panthers have too much going against them at this time. I'll make it a lower scoring game because that wouldn't make sense. So, you know, that's what I'll go with. 21-17 Lions.
They're sucking you in, Joe.
No, I know. See, and that's what I thought when I had them winning. I'm like, no, they're sucking me in, and they always disappoint me when they suck me in. So,
look, when McCaffrey's in the game, the offense puts up 416 yards a game. When McCaffrey's not in the game, they put up 322. So almost 100 yards less without McCaffrey in the game. Now you take Bridgewater away, and now you're like, okay. How much, you know, can they actually get? Like, I'm not even confident they can score three touchdowns. Like, but I could see them getting close enough where they're kicking field goals, right? I mean, my score doesn't point to that, but that's kind of like what I'm thinking. Like, I could see a two touchdown, three field goal day, and that gives them 25 points, right? The defense isn't terrific. You know, the defense has weaknesses in the areas that the Lions prefer to attack. And then you're missing your top two players. And, man, that's on offense. And that's really where your strength is. You take those two guys away. I just – it's a hard one for me to pick against the Lions this week because of all those factors. You know, like I'm worried that I don't want to come back next week and the first thing out of your mouth be like, they sucked me back in, Eric, you know?
Yeah, yep. I have to blame you when that happens.
Well, I'll tell you what. Look, the Lions have also won three of their five games on the road. So they're not a bad road team. I like them a little bit better right now. I'm surprised that you went with me as well.
You sucked me in. That's why.
Well, all right, you can blame me. If they lose, I will expect the angry texts.
No, well, yeah, you should, just because that's how I have to do it.
Well, I tell you what, I neglected to look at the reviews this week.
We're up to 326 reviews. They're good.
Oh, nice. Did we get any new ones? Let me take a gander real fast. No, Be Great was the last one. Be Great wrote that nice thing about us. 326, that's great, right? happy with that.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
You know, and I know people are still listening. We're getting a lot of interaction. We're getting more followers on social media all the time. Got a few more subscribers to the Patreon, which is great. And so, you know, even though there's more podcasts and sharks in the water, you know, people are still tuned in.
They're hanging on with us.
That's great. You know, I think these next two games are really pivotal in trying to figure out.
I always say that every two games. Every two games are pivotal.
Well, this is the life of a Lions fan, though, right?
Yeah.
You almost take it two games at a time. So.
Yeah.
Well, if you want them to win, then root for them to win. If you want them to lose, then root for them to lose.
Enjoy yourself while you're watching.
Exactly. I will be at home watching diligently, hoping for a victory.
Yeah, and why not? Same here. All right, until next time, everyone. Let's go Lions.